Good evening, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of The Bog. I'm going to apologize for my voice. I am fighting a cold, so I apologize. We were supposed to have Mr. Neil John from the Iron Age Jodish on, but I'm not sure what happened, so we'll get him on an upcoming episode. But like always, make sure you follow here at dlive.tv/Dave Martell, where we're live every single Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern for The Bog. And then also go over and sub to my YouTube channel, Dave Martell, where I upload every single episode so you guys can go watch on playback after they are live, just in case you missed it live. And speaking of Mr. Neil John, go over to facebook.com/Iron Age Jodish and go check out some authentic Vedic astrology. The stuff is so super cool. Unfortunately, we couldn't get him on tonight, but we'll have him on, and we're going to talk more about the Iron Age Jodish and authentic Vedic astrology, because it's such an interesting topic. So go over to facebook.com/Iron Age Jodish and get a reading, get a chart, and tell him Big Dave sent you. If you like The Bog, you want to support The Bog, there's two ways you can do that. First, you can go over to patreon.com/TheBog and go sign up so you can get an RSS feed, so you can get audio of every single episode of The Bog. So you can listen to in the car, on your commutes, at work, or at the gym. There's a tier for everybody, $5 all the way up to $50. And then also, the other way you could support us is at shop.spreadshirt.com/bogshop and go get yourself some sweet Bog merch, man. We got so much cool stuff over there. We have t-shirts. We have maternity shirts for the ladies out there that are carrying babies like my wife is doing right now. Speaking of 40 days or something like that till my baby girl is born. It's going to be my third child, so that's pretty great. I'm looking forward to that. But you could get a dress for your lady if she's not pregnant. You could also go get an insulated steel water bottle thing for when you're at the gym. There's artisan chef aprons. There's hats. There's bags. There's all kinds of stuff. High-quality stuff, not cheap Chinese dog crap. So go over to shop.spreadshirt.com/bogshop if you want to support us there. Tonight, riding shotgun with me is Mr. Andre from Norway, and we're going to talk about tales from Norway. We're going to talk about the history and language of Norway, and we're going to talk about some folk tales and religious stuff, and we're going to get all into it and see what Mr. Andre has to tell us, wisdom from the country of Norway, which is a really fascinating place. It's kind of a mysterious place for guys like me that are American. It's when we think of Norway, we think of boats, we think of salmon, we think of guys with those horizontally striped shirts hanging out on their boats. We think of mountains, and we think of black metal, and there's a few things that we think about with Norway. Mr. Andre, first of all, how are you doing tonight, sir?
I'm doing very good.
Wonderful. So, what is the stereotype that I'm drawing up in my head? The American view of Norway, is that accurate, or is that kind of like, yeah, you know, is it kind of a cartoon?
Honestly, most of the things that you listed there, I would say, is accurate, except for the striped shirt thing. I'm not sure what that is a reference to, actually.
Yeah, we have a joke that the horizontal striped shirts, that means you're a Norwegian sailor. Norwegian sailors wear those shirts.
Oh, yeah. In that case, like, that would actually be correct. I actually didn't think about that. That was standard attire for the typical Norwegian sailor. And, I guess just to start off there, you know, that kind of makes sense that people have a somewhat prominent view of Norway due to the fact that Norway, throughout most of history, up until fairly recently, had a significantly sized trading fleet. There was basically no harbor in the world that had not seen the Norwegian flag on board at least one vessel. And Norwegian sailors also seem to have made quite a reputation for themselves in most parts of the world.
That's interesting. So, because that's what we associate Norway with is nautical things, sailing and fishing and, you know, all of this kind of stuff. And that's really it is a staple of Norway's, as you mentioned, with the sailing and stuff. Was there ever a time that Norway had like a powerful navy?
Usually when we think of, like, if you're talking about the powerful navy, like, as I said, we had always had a very significant sized trading fleet. But what Norway was definitely a powerful naval force during the medieval period, usually from the year 1000 about up until the 1300s. That was the so-called golden days, the golden era for Norway and the Kingdom of Norway in general, after it had been unified and started collectivizing somewhat more, and it started really putting pressure on Northern Europe, not just by conquest, as the conquest they stopped after the failed invasion of England when Harald Hardrada was beaten. He was beaten back by William the Conqueror.
Yeah, donning armor is one thing I didn't mention. Donning armor in the chat says he just thinks of Vikings. Now, what you're describing here kind of sounds like the Viking Age sort of never stopped, because that was the Vikings' power was from their naval capabilities.
Oh, absolutely. One thing that's common to see that I personally don't agree with, because official census basically has it, the Viking Age ended in 1066. And because that's when the true conquests of the Vikings stopped. They stopped the raiding. They stopped the conquest of England. They abandoned most of their holdings in places like, well, again, like England. And Normandy became its own kingdom or duchy. I'm not sure what you want to call it. But they more or less stopped, because what people have to understand during the Viking Age there, after that time period when the so-called Viking Age ended, you still had Vikings. They just shifted their focus to fighting other people, to fighting themselves. This was the time period where the Scandinavian nation started unifying. They started gathering into kingdoms or larger kingdoms. You no longer had the chieftains and the chiefdoms and the petty kingdoms that usually you think about when you think about the Viking Age. You got three significantly sized kingdoms in the form of Denmark, Sweden, and Norway. And when you're talking about naval power, what we know is that Norway has had some of the largest Viking ships, longships, that has ever been found in graves and so forth. You have quite a bit of them in Denmark, in Roskilde. But in Norway, they are scattered all over the place. And allegedly, the largest longship ever built, according to the different stories, like the sagas and so forth, was built in Norway and used by a Norwegian king.
I believe it was King Crowbone, wasn't it? I was actually just recently watching a thing specifically about Viking ships. And I believe they said the largest ship ever found was believed to belong to King Crowbone.
Yeah, I believe you're correct there. In the stories, however, the largest ship, like, we haven't found it, because most likely it was destroyed during a battle. But the largest ship allegedly ever constructed was the ship of Olaf Tryggvason.
And some of these ships, like when we think Viking ships, we think of something small and portable. And so some of these ships that they made were absolutely massive. Not massive as maybe like you're picturing like a galleon or something later in the late medieval period. But they were, for the time, they were absolutely gigantic vessels. And they were a formidable piece of technology that was used at the time.
Well, yeah, absolutely. The longships was... I wouldn't say that, for instance, like when we think of a longship, that's more of a designation of the general shape of the ship, not necessarily the size of it. So you had longships. They were called longships because they were like elongated. They were long, and they weren't particularly broad necessarily the way we think of like ships, like, as you said, like galleons and caravels and, you know, the age of sail ships. The longships were somewhat different because, like, you had different classes of them. And what usually people considered the longships were the military ships, and these could easily reach like 30 meters, like at times they could be like 30 meters long occasionally, and they could carry as much as I believe between 120 to 160 men, if not more, when That's fully incredible. Equipped for war.
So I just looked it up just now. The largest ship ever found, is you're indeed correct, was found in Norway. It's called the Mikkelbust ship from Nordfjordeid. I don't know how to say that word. It's the largest Viking ship whose remains have been found in Norway. It was estimated length of 30 meters. For my Americans out there, that's almost 100 feet.
And yeah, the ship of Ola Tryggvason was, according to the sagas, were close to, I guess that would be approximately like 130 to 140 feet long. But as I also said, we never found the ship because it most likely sank, but I believe they had the capacity to build so. And I want to add, and I suppose there might be a somewhat of a bias speaking here, but I would say the Vikings at the time, at least in Europe, if not in generally the wider world at the time, were the finest shipbuilders of their time up until the 14, 1500s. Before this, we never had a vessel, as far as we know at least, that was able to cross open sea. And it was Norwegians, it was the Norwegian Vikings in their longships that crossed the Atlantic and settled places like the Hebrides, the Shetlands, the Orkneys, the Faroese, Greenland, and ultimately landed and discovered North America in what is now the modern Newfoundland.
Yeah. Real quick, we got a dono from Made in USA Review. Just donated 5 lemons. Many, many blessings and many thanks to Made in USA Review. And also shout out to our boy Bartleby, one of the best mods on the planet. Much love, many blessings to him. So when we're talking about these Viking vessels, these longships, like we're talking like picture that 100 feet. That's 100 feet. That's 3 buses. You know what I mean? That's 3 school buses, guys. That's absolutely massive during the Iron Age and probably before that. And that's just the largest one ever found. Like what Andre's saying here. There were bigger ships that were built that we just didn't find. You know, that's just the biggest one that we found. These guys were immense, immense shipwrights. They were building vessels and had seafaring technology that was just off the charts. They had ways to navigate back in those times. This was the time that most people, like, you know, people weren't reading. People were living in huts, and it was not a technologically advanced times. And these guys were sailing open ocean, and not only were they sailing open ocean in these longships were also designed to go up rivers. They were light enough that the guys, not the 100-footer, but the guys, the regular longships, they were designed so they were light, so guys could get out, pick this ship up, and carry it across land. They were extremely versatile ships.
Yeah, and I want to add to that that one of the more interesting aspects that I find about the longships is that they did a lot of tests. Actually, they did the tests not very far from where I'm from in the University of the City of Trondheim. They built parts of the keel of the ship, of a longship, and they tested it against the waves to see, theoretically, with favorable winds and open sails, how quickly it could go. And it could reach speeds of approximately 20 knots. And basically, that is the same speed as a modern-day ferry. A gasoline-driven ferry, that is.
That's incredible. Yeah.
They also built these ships completely from their own minds. They didn't write anything down. They didn't have any plans lying around. They didn't write any sort of blueprints. These shipbuilding techniques, and allegedly there was so that each family of shipbuilders, and this was more or less a sacred position for at least people in Norway, and I believe in Denmark and Sweden as well, but especially in Norway, families of shipwrights and shipbuilders during the Viking Age and later, they were held in extreme esteem. They were really important, because these people could build these ships out of their own mind. They knew exactly how to build these ships, where the nails were supposed to go, what types of planks you needed, and so forth. And this isn't just a ship. This isn't just a boat. This is a really an engineering marvel of its time, because this is the Iron Age. As you said, this is not a technologically advanced age, and these ships were something else. I can just mention a few parts regarding like what makes these ships really interesting. First of all, even the largest ships, as you said, they couldn't be carried per se, but they could be dragged from one river to another. And even the largest ships, they could go down rivers, because the keel, it would never sit further down than like 3 feet. Even the 30, like the 100 feet long long ships, they wouldn't sit more than 3 to 4 feet in the water. That is really shallow, because they were somewhat broad, but they were also light. They were built in such a very, in an extremely lightweight manner. So they could pass through rivers, shallow waters, and they could pierce waves, which allowed them to cross the Atlantic. Secondly, they were flexible. The planks of the ship were constructed in such a way that the planks and the ship would bend with the waves. And this sounds like a bad idea in a modern-day ship, or even in our Age of Sail ship. You don't want the planks to bend, because that would be bad news for the ship. However, the long ships were constructed in such a way that these ships, when they crossed dangerous waters, such as the North Sea and the Atlantic, which is at times extremely volatile and dangerous, like we are looking at really tall waves, we are looking at hurricanes, rogue waves, and so forth. These could withstand the power by distributing the pressure of these waves throughout the ship by bending the keel, by bending the planks. It was made to do so. And this made them extremely quick, durable, and overall just extremely efficient at doing what you wanted them to do, be that crossing open oceans, transporting goods, or transporting soldiers. Which is exactly why the Viking raids were so feared in Europe, because they could strike places that were thought impossible, such as the Siege of Paris, or I should say the three sieges of Paris, I believe it was, three or four sieges. The Vikings had sieged to Paris. They succeeded because they brought their fleet of longships with them up the rivers. Nobody expected that to happen.
Yeah, they were, you know, when you think about Vikings, you know, obviously the History Channel documentaries of the barbarians, like all this, these people were not fools. They weren't bumbling backwoods, you know, primitive people. They were advanced people for the time. They were so advanced that they plunged mainland Europe into darkness again. Europe feared them because, and it wasn't just because of their ferocity in battle and all that, which we could talk about their battle tactics as well. They were brilliant tacticians with battle, but their technology is what gave them an edge. They had superior technology for the time, and with their seafaring vessels, it was absolutely incredible. As Andre said, they would go up a river and they would hit you like right at dawn. You didn't even hear them coming, and the Europeans thought they were literally demons. That's how scared they were of these people. Speaking of Folkish Farmer, he just drops a guinea on us. My man, the story of the Viking that picked a mast up by himself was impressive. I'm not familiar with this story, Folkish Farmer, but thank you for the ninja guinea, my man.
Oh yeah, actually, according to what I know, that is actually like a feat of strength that was done during the Viking Age, and We don't know the details of the size and the weight of the mast, but this it's a mast. It's massive. It's made of a solid chunk of wood, and this would be several hundreds of kilos. And he picked it up himself, completely by himself. And he lifted it over his head, but his back broke when he did it.
Oh,
The problem was, they're like, you know, he still did it. It was an impressive feat of strength. The guy was a beast, but he suffered some injuries. And the modern day Icelandic heavyweight lifter, what's he called again? Hafþór Júlíusson, the guy who played the mountain in Game of Thrones, if you're familiar with him. Yeah, he was the one who broke that record, but it hadn't been broken since the Viking Age. That is an impressive feat of strength from someone in a medieval time like that. Like, as you say, we're thinking barbarians, we're thinking simplistic, malnourished savages who just live in the mountains, in mud huts and tree huts, and dress in furs and so forth. And while partially true, that's not the entire story. Because I would want to make the argument that living in a place like Norway, even during the Viking Age when the climate was milder, it takes quite a special kind of people to survive. Because the climate, the temperatures, and the weather of Norway just makes it so hostile to any sort of life. It's not really made for human habitation, at least not in winter. And in the medieval times, or the Viking Age, you needed some skill and cunning to be able to survive. You couldn't just survive by being a strong, manly man. You needed intelligence. You couldn't be a savage. You couldn't live in caves.
Yeah, and speaking of that, the Viking Age, they built some pretty impressive structures as well. Some of these longhouses were absolutely massive. We're talking hundreds of feet long. We're talking hundreds of people lived in them, and there was multiple longhouses. I believe, what is it, Trollheim or something? What is it? What is it? No. The biggest one is in Denmark. I can't remember off the top of my head now. Got six.
I know what you mean. I don't remember the name either, but yeah, Denmark had the largest longhouse. But we had some significantly sized houses in Norway as well. It's actually one of them that has been reconstructed. And this is recommended for people who want to go on a vacation to Norway and want to, like, I suppose, experience the architecture and the climate and the feel of the Viking Age, is to go to the Lofoten Museum of the what's the official title of it? It's just called Lofoter Viking Museum. It's the Viking Museum in Lofoten, and it has a huge longhouse, complete with a small town, as well as like the farmlands around it that was reconstructed exactly on top of where the original longhouse of what was thought to be a jarl that lived there. And this thing it's not small. Calling it a house is almost offensive. It's more of a long mansion than a long house.
It's incredible. Incredible what they were able to do back then. That's why I always push back against the barbarian narrative, the archaic primitive narrative. These people that lived in Scandinavia, our ancestors that lived in ancient Germania, they were sophisticated people that did the best that they could with the resources that they had available, and they did quite a bit. They had immense trade routes, even going back as far as the Bronze Age. We're talking. Archaeologists have dug up people that were buried that were wearing silks that came from Asia, came from India and stuff. These were people that had really extensive trade networks. They were very wealthy. They were great. They were incredible people. They achieved more than imagine like modern people being shifted back then. You think they'd be building boats and longhouses like that with the wood that they had available, because they didn't have good stone. One of the biggest criticisms they say about Germanic people and people of the North is they never build anything out of stone. Well, because they didn't have good stone.
I want to add to that, if you're living in a place like Denmark, Sweden, or Norway, if you've ever been to those places and experienced a true Scandinavian winter with the wind howling and super cool rain and the snow and It's awful. And stone is not really that much of a good isolator. Stone gets cold. It takes a while to heat up. Using wood is the superior alternative if you're living in a cold climate. It's not just that it's easier to build with. It's also just better at keeping temperatures, especially if you combine it with turf, if you're familiar with what turf is.
Yeah, you're talking like the mossy stuff that they use for insulation.
Yeah, it's mossy soil. It's soil taken from marshlands. And this can be dried. If you dry it, it makes excellent fire starters. Like, you don't use it to start fires per se, but like, it burns easily, it gives off a lot of heat, and it keeps warm for a very long time. If you throw this on a fire or in a stove or something, it's superior to wood. And this has been a tradition to do in Norway and most of Scandinavia for an extremely long time, to take chunks, like small chunks of soil land like that, of marshland, and dry it out and use it for fire. But you can also stack it on top of your house, like on the ceiling, or you can stack it on the sides of the walls, and this will insulate better, far better than modern insulation. I've been inside houses that have been isolated with this, and it's almost unbearable in the summer, but it's so comfortable in the winter. Using stone, however, as you said, we didn't have good stone. We had very little good stone. We had mostly the geography of Scandinavia is mostly granite, which is really hard to cut. But you also have limestone, but limestone is still difficult to carve. But as I said, it's still impressive to be able to create these wooden constructs that would be able to withstand winters that most people would not even be capable of surviving in a modern day, not without central heating and so forth.
Yeah,
this was a different time. It was harsh.
So quick shout out to Bartleby, who just resubbed for another month and is now on a 3-month sub streak. Hail to Bartleby. So So let's move on. I knew we were going to talk a bit about the Viking Age, because who doesn't want to talk about the Viking Age? How fascinating. But let's move on into how Norway became Norway today. When did Norway begin to collectivize and turn into kingdoms, and how did Norway become Norway as we understand it today instead of just another regional place where jarls and chieftains lived?
Well, the first official king of centralized Norway was King Harald Fairhair, or Harald Hårfagre, as he's called. And, the story goes that he was wanting to swoon a woman, and the woman didn't want him. So he said, "Will you marry me if I gather all of Norway under one kingdom?" And she just said yes, just thinking that's probably impossible. And he kind of did it. He didn't gather the entire thing, but he gathered most of it.
Did she marry him then?
No, not really.
What a bitch. Oh, my God. She's probably like, "Well, you didn't get these counties." Yeah.
Come on, you fluke. He did that for you. Come on.
What a tease. I hope he got a better woman.
Actually, I'm not sure he actually did. Because his rule was not exactly very successful, but either way, you got like a long line of successions of kings after him, and these were struggling for control, and being of, I suppose they weren't really Vikings at the time, but they definitely had the Viking spirits. So there were bastards all around. They had a bastard in every county, if not several. Jeez. And these ended up in succession crises. They ended up having a more old-fashioned style of, "Hey, you're the king, but I got a bigger axe than you. And if I put my axe in your head, I'm the king. Who's going to argue?" And this kind of happened for a very long time before about the 1200s, where they kind of like settled down and started thinking and realizing, maybe we should try the European approach and maybe not have a succession crisis and a potential civil war every week. And they started collectivizing more in this standard, familiar European style, where they had noble families, they had the guilds, they had the ruling monarch and his court and so forth. And when they stopped infighting and started focusing on other things, they could develop something more akin to what we know as a modern nation, or at least like a modern nation in a medieval sense, where you had large, extensive trade networks, you had diplomacy with all the countries that didn't consist of, hey, give us money or we're going to burn your house down. It was somewhat more civil, but there was definitely still some animosity. As I said, the focus shifted from fighting amongst themselves and more along the lines of, hey, I live in Norway, you live in Norway, what should we do? Oh, you want to go invade Sweden? Yeah, sure. And the Sweden, and then Sweden invaded Norway, and then Denmark invaded Sweden, and Norway invaded Denmark, and just kept doing that for a while.
So, when you guys still have a king and a queen, right? You guys still have royal family.
Oh, yeah. All the three Scandinavian countries are still monarchies.
Do they have any sort of political power, or they're just kind of decorations?
Somewhat. Well, they are a constitutional monarchy. They're not an absolute monarchy, but the king of Norway is still the head of parliament, technically. He is the one who initiates parliamentary meetings, and every law that is passed, it's not passed, but every law that is suggested has to go by the king, and he has to give his supervision to pass the law. He has to stamp it, basically, to make it legal. If it's not stamped by the king, it's not legal. He's also the head of the Norwegian armed forces, be that the army, the navy, or the air force. He's still the head of all the military operations. And if there is a declaration of war against Norway, only the king himself is allowed to declare war in another country. And this is also the same, for instance, if Norway ever wants to go to war against Sweden once again, it's the king that has to decide that.
I think you guys should. The Swedes they're not looking good these days.
I would honestly argue, and sorry to every Swede in the audience, but Sweden never looked good, not compared to us.
let's send that to the Golden One. Let's tell him.
Honestly, if you manage to get him on the show, I'll fight him.
Yeah, that sounds great. Let's do it, dude.
I'm probably going to lose, but I'll fight him.
That's hilarious. But what about modern Norwegians? How do they feel about the king and everything like that?
Well, I suppose the problem here is Norway, at least in my opinion, didn't face modernity very well. So there has been a degree of animosity towards the king and the queen, the royal family in general, that, you know, they're not part of the people and they're not really connected to anything. And they're a remnant of an older time and they're a relic of a system that didn't work. And we should follow the European examples and get rid of them. Like, there's so few monarchies left. But honestly, in my own personal opinion, I would say that the king is probably one of the best monarchs in the world at the moment, because he's old, but he's very much known as like the folk king. He takes public transportation. He goes out hunting with his hunting buddies, and these are not like nobility or anything. No, Norway doesn't have a noble culture. We don't have a noble families anymore. He just goes hunting with his local team. These are just boys. Normal people.
The king goes hunting with his boys. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, he does. Like, he just goes hunting with his boys. Like, he's just surrounded by a bunch of guys with guns, and he doesn't care.
Pretty base.
So, he's actually really base. Like, he's, you know, he's old. He's kind of a softy, I guess. But he was very much a skilled monarch. And he's very much a figurehead. So modern-day Norway feels conflicted because, like, they dislike the idea of monarchy, but King Harald V, he's kind of cool. Like, we like him. And most likely we're going to see a succession soon, though, because he's getting old, he's getting frail, he's having some problems with his health, and most likely his son is going to take over. But I don't know what kind of king he's going to be.
That's interesting. That's really interesting.
He also married a commoner, by the way. Like, he married a commoner despite the fact that his father didn't really want him to. His wife, Queen Sonia, she's a seamstress. She was the son, like, she was the daughter of a seamstress, seamstress and a tailor. Nothing, any, no noble lineage, no nothing like that. He just fell in love with her, wanted to marry her. His dad said no, and he said, "Well, if you don't let me marry her, I guess you're not going to have a king soon. I'm not going to become king if you don't let me marry her." And ultimately, he just let him do it.
That's interesting. You know, it's sometimes, because I have, you know, obviously I have traditionalist friends that are from across the pond that are in European countries, and here in the United States, it's just like common to the politicians that run this country. It's just free for all just to criticize them and talk bad about them, make fun of them, and say nasty things, and say you're not going to listen to them. So we don't have this inherent understanding of respect for authority like you guys do. So sometimes I'm like, I'll make jokes about the royalty or criticize royalty from other countries, even though I am somebody that would very much like to have royalty. And a lot of times I forget, there's folks out there that still take it seriously. Like, for example, during the elections and everything like that, President Trump was, the last elections, President Trump, like, did something to disrespect the Queen of England or something, and Survived the Jive was pissed. He was not a fan. He did not like it. He's like, how dare he disrespect our queen? I'm like, why should he? And he's like, and he like got fired up about it. And he like cut me some lip about it. I was like, all right, I'm sorry. I didn't realize. But so it's pretty interesting to see people that are still, because most of the time you run into an average British person, they're like, they don't care at all about the monarchy. And it's pretty cool to hear you talk about how you still have feel some kind of way about having the monarchy and having your king around and stuff like that. Because if the average European that I've met, and honestly, if we had king and queens over here, if the king rose up and said, we have to fight for the country or something, most people would be like, oh, no, I'm not doing that. You know what I mean? So it's
pretty cool. Like, I completely agree with that, honestly, because, like, of course, like, the idea of monarchy as we know it today and the king and so forth, you know, it's still technically, like, Christian and all that, but it's the idea of having a symbolic figurehead for a nation. Like, he's not just a figure of the nation. When our King Harold is abroad, he is the nation. And it gives a different distinction of authority and respect to have a single figurehead that represents the values and the dignity of said nation, instead of just a president or a prime minister or something like that representing a country. Because this is just, it's just average Joe that has been elected for 4 years or 2 years or whatever, and he's just a schmuck.
Yeah.
Like, you don't agree with him, but the idea that you don't get a choice with a king, of course, it's not always positive, but in some regards, it's still positive in that you don't have a choice. I mean, this guy is representative of your nation. Disrespecting the king is disrespecting the nation itself. And Norway has been a monarchy since its foundation. And we have traded kings. We've had foreign kings. For those who don't know, Norway was under control, more or less, as a colony or a junior partner of Denmark for close to 400 years. But we were never treated badly. We weren't treated like the Indians were treated by the English. We weren't treated like, I suppose, the Americans were treated by the English. Mm-hmm. We were treated with a degree of respect and brotherhood. Denmark recognized Norway as fellow Scandinavian brothers taken under their wing. And we had Danish kings, and we've had Swedish kings, and the current king is descendant from a line from the Kingdom of Denmark. The first king of Norway after a monarchy was removed in the 1300s was a Danish king. He spoke Danish. He was Danish. He was a Danish prince. And he was, and this is kind of like interesting story that laid the foundations for why I think the Norwegian, like the Norwegian monarchy, the Norwegian royal family is worthy of a degree of respect. Because when we wanted a king in 1905, we fought an independence war against Sweden and we managed to win. The Sweden gave up and decided, well, you do you. You go be your independent nation. And they wanted a monarchy. They voted, are we going to be a democracy, a parliamentary system, or do we want a king? And people almost overwhelmingly wanted a king. And so we sought counsel with Denmark. And Denmark told us that they had a prince that could become a king of Norway. But him, he didn't want to be king of Norway unless people wanted him. So he requested specifically to be voted in. He wanted people in Norway to vote. Do you want him? Do you want King Olaf for a king? And people voted yes. People wanted this king. And only then was he willing to become. He was handed a nation on a silver platter without any restrictions and just told, hey, do you want to be a king? You're not in line of succession for the Danish throne. Do you want to be a king of Norway? But he said no, unless people wanted him to be there. Wow. And I think that speaks a degree of respect. And most people don't know this because this is like such a minuscule part of history, but I think it just it speaks to the humility and the overall folkishness of the royal family of Norway, which is a tradition that they've retained even to this day. They are part of the people because people genuinely like them. So, like, they don't necessarily like the idea of the monarchy, but they like the king, and they like the story of the king behind them.
That's really fascinating. So, before we go on talking about kings, because we talked about kings all last week, too, let's move on to some other cool Norwegian stuff. Real quick, I want to talk about kind of what Norway is like today, and then I want to finish up with some folk tales and stuff like that. So, tell us about what do you eat in Norway? Like what is the standard food? Like that's what I'm the most fascinated about with stuff. Everybody knows Big Dave loves to eat. I love cooking. I love culinary tradition, and I think that culinary tradition is one of the things that encapsulates ancestral thought the most in modern culture, anyways. Because, you know, maybe you have a dish that, you know, grandma made, that great-grandma made, that great-great-great-great-grandma made, and it's just something you've always eaten. Well, you're eating something that your ancestors have made for a long time. It's a really special thing. So culinary tradition, to me, is a huge part of spirituality and ancestral religion. So tell us a little bit about what are some of the staples and stuff in Norway, and if somebody came to Norway, what should they go and try?
Well, just to say, blatantly, like, Norway has kind of lost a lot of its culinary tradition. It's mainly because people have somewhat of a negative association. People who grew up with the food, or they had parents or grandparents who grew up with the food, they've grown tired of it. It's basically what you consider, I suppose you could call it, poverty food. Norway was always a very poor nation, and it was more subsistence diet. That's, I guess, it's the term for it. You lived off what the land could provide, and nothing more than that, really. So a lot of people have, at least in cities, gone back, not gone back, but like gone forward, I suppose, into more like international cuisine, like I guess you'd see in most cities. But in the rural areas, you have a lot of the staples of the diet is, of course, fish. It kind of makes sense because, you know, Norway is a very coastal nation. And you got sheep. Sheep is a very big staple because sheep is it's a big part of Norwegian culinary tradition. Because sheep, they just they just live here. They're fine with it. They handle the weather.
Say I fly into Oslo tomorrow, and I'm like, hey, I'm starving. What would you go show me?
Well, I'll definitely want to try and show you things like, I guess, you call them like traditional Christmas food since Yule is coming up. It's the dish called ribbe, which is side pork. It's the cut from the pork or the side of it. And you broil it in the oven, you slice the skin of it, you rub it in with salt and pepper, and you serve it alongside brown sauce and potatoes. It's really simple, but it's really good. You also have one that I'm not really fond of, but definitely it's a staple, and it's pinnekjøtt. It's ribs of sheep that is more or less smoked, boiled/smoked over pine wood or something akin to that, like pine wood or oak or different types of tree, like different types of wood in a pot. And people really like it. They just say that it's really delicious. I've never been a big fan of it myself, but it's definitely something worth trying if you're ever out here in, like, you know, November, December, so forth. And most people recommend going to foreign nations, especially things like Norway in summertime, but I'd really recommend trying to go there in wintertime too, to see Norway in winter, because Norway in winter is definitely, it's something to experience.
I'd imagine it's beautiful with all the mountains and the snow and everything.
Oh, absolutely. It's stunning. But if you have a good day, you have some sunlight, and you have the mountains, and you have the large plains and such that you have sometimes, just covered in snow, just completely covered in snow, it's really beautiful. And with the evergreen trees as well, it's truly a stunning sight.
Yeah.
If you want, however, to come, well, what you have to understand, like, Norway doesn't have, like, a Norwegian culinary tradition, because most regions in Norway have their own traditions. And I want to say that the traditions in my region, Trøndelag, it's definitely, it's more fish-based. And it's more simple than what you probably get down south, because they use some different types of herbs and so forth. But if you ever go to Trøndelag, things like just salt meat, it's just called sachet, salt meat. It's just salted meat, usually from the feet of the pig, and it's deceptively good, despite the fact that it's just, hey, it's just salt pork. Like, well, how good can it be? Like, I really recommend it. If you boil it, serve it with mashed potatoes or rutabaga, if you're familiar with what rutabaga is.
Yeah.
It's really good.
That's incredible. That's cool. I'm going to have to take a look and see what the Norwegians are cooking up there. But we have a few minutes left, and I do want to dig into some folk tales, because I know you guys have some really fascinating folk tales. There's kind of this stereotype that Scandinavians are very materialist and kind of, I guess, I don't know what the word would be for it, but They're very sterile with their spiritual view. They're extremely science and secular and all this kind of stuff. But I've spoken to quite a few Scandinavians that are actually pretty superstitious, I guess you could say, that still believe in spirits and fairies and little people and like stuff like that. And it's pretty interesting to know that there's that kind of contrast. Is that something that you experience in your region and people that you're around? Is it a little more on the sterile secular side, or is there still kind of this superstitious belief in spirits and whatnot?
It's a mix. What people have to understand when they're talking to Scandinavians is that a lot of people assume that Scandinavians are like normal people, but the truth of the matter is Scandinavians are very, very, and I mean very, like extremely private. Talking about personal beliefs, be that politics or moral and especially religious views, that is something you keep to yourself. That is something you don't really share with people. So when a Scandinavian says that they don't believe in anything and they don't like it, they don't hold any sort of specific views, that is not necessarily true. Because
they could be lying.
What?
They could be lying.
Well, they are kind of lying because, like, they just want to keep it private. And when it comes to religious and superstitious views, it's more prevalent and common than I think people believe. Like, most Scandinavians like to portray themselves as, like, secular atheists who don't believe in nothing. But I don't necessarily believe that's the case, because if I'm going into the folklore here, because we have a very rich and deep aspect. Like, we have a very rich tradition of folklore. And of course, it varies a lot by region to region, but there is at least one part here I want to touch on. And this is what we called the Underjordiske. These are literally called the Underworlders, like the Otherworlders, the people from the underworld.
Can you,
like,
say the word again?
The Underjordiske.
Underjordiske.
Yeah, it just literally means like under-earthly, underworlders. These are creatures of different sizes and shapes and mentalities and attitudes who come from the underworld, and that, like, it comes from a different realm than our own. If you want to connect it to Norse mythology, I guess you could compare them to the Alvar, like the Alfar, the light elves, I guess you could call them, or the dark elves. These are creatures of chaos. These are creatures who are extremely different from us. And we have a lot of stories that is very similar to, I guess you could find in most places of the world, but it's very prevalent in Scandinavia, of people going into mountains or forests or, like, desolate places where people don't live, and just they're gone. They disappear completely. And a very old tradition that we had is saying that, you know, they've been taken. What we're referring to is that they've been taken by the people of the underworld. And allegedly, if you go outside, in, like, walking in the mountains in Norway or the forests and the desolate places, and you're alone and you hear someone call out to you, they might say something, they might say your name. Don't listen to it. Go the other way. Just keep walking. Don't look back. Don't respond. Because according to myth that we have, if you respond, they will show up and they will promise you wealth, they will promise you glory, they will promise you women, they will promise you whatever that is your heart's desire, as long as you follow them. And if you do, you will be taken by the mountain, or bergtatt, as we say, taken by the mountains themselves. You will go in the realms and you will be lost forever. We don't know what happens to them. Maybe their wishes are fulfilled. Maybe they're just devoured. We don't know. But that is a very prevalent theme in Norway. Norway is a very wild country. It's not very centralized in most cases. You have cities, you have towns, but there's a lot of large open wilderness. And you have to be careful when you walk out there. Not just because of the mundane dangers of, like, animals and rock slides and, you know, typical dangerous stuff. But if you're the superstitious sort, or I should say the sensible sort, you should never try and listen to something that might be unfamiliar to you, like the underworlders. Because they will seek to take you away. They will seek to grab you and take you into their mountain halls. And nobody knows what will happen to you.
All right, I'm now freaked out.
Well, don't go walking alone in Norway. Don't respond to people saying your name or asking you something when you're when you know that you're alone.
Well, that's a good segue into a Halloween special that we should have. Yeah, we got Halloween coming up, so maybe we'll do a spooky episode. But anyway, unfortunately, Mr. Andre, the whole hour went by, so we got to shut it down. Do you have anything in closing you'd like to say to folks about your home country of Norway?
Well, despite the rumors of dangerous spirits and elves and the underworlders and so forth wandering around in our hills and our forests, and also on the more mundane side, Norway being like a really progressive and almost embarrassing country at times, I really recommend people to go visit Norway and see for themselves, because Norway is definitely an experience, even for Europeans and Americans. It doesn't really matter. Norway is a really unique and very wild country to experience. It's still extremely wild and untamed in certain areas, and cities and so forth are still a very familiar sight to people who might not want to wander too far. But Norway in general is, I would say, a really calm and beautiful country. Norway is usually an image people conjure up in their heads of Norway is fjords and forests and so forth. And it's definitely worth at least once in your life to go to see one of the last bastions of wild nature that you can truly find in Europe. This is a really wild and beautiful country, and I really recommend basically everybody to experience it at least once. Norwegians might seem unfriendly at times and at first, but we are really not. We're just really private. We're not unfriendly. We're not hostile. We're just really introverted by nature. But definitely try to go to Norway at least once in your lives.
If I go to Norway, I'm going to go up and I'm going to shake hands with strangers, and I'm going to go stand at the urinal right next to people when they're peeing, and I'm going to do all of the uncomfortable things. They're going to kick me out.
Yeah, no, they're not going to kick you out because they're going to be too embarrassed to kick you out. So you're basically allowed to do what you want. They're just going to assume that you're American.
All right. I'm going to go run roughshod over Norway. Yeah, but that sounds great. But Andre, man, great job tonight, man. We had a guest lined up, and unfortunately, our guest got his times mixed up, so he couldn't make it. So Mr. Andre was the guest for this evening, and he did really, really tremendous. So this is all off the top of his head, talking about his home country. That sounds really beautiful and awesome, and has so much rich history. And one of these days, we're actually talking about maybe someday that the Bog crew will go up and visit Norway and go visit some of the sites and try some of the food and experience Norway, as Mr. Andre so eloquently described. So, unfortunately, that's it for this evening. Everybody make sure to go over to facebook.com/IronAgeJodish and go check out Neil John, man. Go check out some authentic Vedic astrology. Go to facebook.com/IronAgeJodish and tell him Big Dave sent you if you decide to get a chart. If you like the Bog, you support the Bog, you want to help the Bog grow and pursue our ambitions and help us keep the lights on, man. We need your guys' help. Go over to patreon.com/thebog and you can go sign up and get an RSS feed. You get audio of every single episode that we do to listen to in your car, at commutes, at the gym, or at work. There's a tier for everybody, $5 all the way up to $50. And if you want to support us one time instead of signing up, you can go over to shop.spreadshirt.com/bogshop and get yourself some sweet Bog merch, man. We got a bunch of designs over there. We got T-shirts. We got dresses. We got hats. We got backpacks. We got bottles and mason jar mugs and all kinds of stuff like that. Go over to the shop.spreadshirt.com/bogshop, like you see in the bottom right there, and go pick up some merch and help us out. Help us keep the lights on. Also, guys, we need your help with some spreading the Bog. So if you like the Bog, you want to pass the Bog off and share it with your friends, and Pick your favorite Bog episode over on our YouTube channel, the Dave YouTube channel, which you should like, subscribe, share over there, and drop it into your favorite, your Telegram chats, your Discord chats, your Facebook groups, your Twitter feed, whatever you got going on. Share the Bog for us, man. Help us out. Help us get the word out. But like always, we're gonna raise a horn here to our most exalted supporters. Here, let me get the horn out here. Many hails and many blessings to House Allen, to our friend Mr. Corey, and to our very own Andre. Hail.